What's up, everybody? Welcome back to episode 2 of this mini-series, Breaking the Plateau. We're talking all about breaking the fatality plateau that we've been stuck on for a fair few years. If you've just stumbled across this episode and you've not listened to the episode 1 of mini-series, me ranting about the fatality rates, go and check that out first. Basically, that just sets the tone of kind of my frustration and explains the provisional rates that we've got for 18-19. So, 18-19? What is wrong with me? Today we're talking with Paul Clark. Paul Clark is doing some awesome things in the game around health and safety, and he's passionate about breaking that plateau and thrives on controversy. I'm going to talk all about that. So without further ado, let's get into the podcast.
Health and safety is almost a victim of its own success.
Weird and oppressive regime of health and safety regulations.
A huge fire engulfs a tower block.
Children being forced to wear goggles to play conkers at school.
Worst oil field disaster, 164 dead.
Rebranding Safety, the modern health and safety podcast, crushing the stereotype. And your host, James McPherson. So, Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Hi, James. Yeah, it's nice to be here.
You pretty much just come out of nowhere on my LinkedIn, and now I can't seem to get rid of you. You're like popping up all over the place, which was quite interesting. And then I saw a video that you did, which I found quite interesting as well. So when I'm doing a bit of research, obviously we had a chat and like said about you coming on the podcast. I did a bit of research on you, on yourself. I noticed that you were captain of your rugby team at Warwick University. Mm-hmm. So first thing I want to know, is that league or is that union?
It's union. Although
it's union, good
I
lad.
Don't know if you've been watching much of the NRL lately down in Australia, but I haven't got the legs anymore. Never had the legs for that kind of level of rugby. There's some serious conditioning in league, but I play union.
Okay, you still play?
Yeah. I'm playing for Bradford Navan at the moment. No longer first, I don't think. Back in at the age of 35, like I said, my knees aren't quite there anymore.
What position you play?
I'd like to play centre, but
I thought you'd be a centre.
Yeah, they keep pushing me into back row. So.
Oh really?
Yeah.
And again, a classic like partnership of those two roles. You're either a flanker or a centre. You can be either or, and that's fine. They call them like the glory positions, don't they? I always used to be a fullback when I played.
Nice.
But no, I quite enjoyed it. You been watching the England games?
Yeah, enjoyed that. It was I'd say that game on Saturday wasn't all that good, but I guess you know Eddie Jones and I can't remember Warren Gatland. That was more of a tactical play, wasn't it? That whole game, it was practicing things like the counter ruck and the counter maul and things like that. So you know it was a bit stalemate, but you know fair play to Wales. They're number one in the world now.
Yeah, I got a few Welsh friends and work colleagues that were all giving it the big I am when they won on Saturday. And I was like, you can carry on running and raving. You beat our B team, so that's fine. I haven't got too much of a problem with that. Anyway, let's crack on. So, I mean, I found it quite interesting also looking at on kind of like your LinkedIn. You look like, and there wasn't much on there before your kind of time at the Global Series, but it looks like you're more from a like sales-based background, which I found interesting. It's the kind of what brought you over to kind of like the HSE engagement side of things. So I'd be really interested, maybe you can just kind of take us on a journey as to where you started and how you come to where you are now and where that kind of passion came from.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's quite a story, really. I mean, I started off originally, I didn't necessarily do that well at school. I mean, I was one of those kind of people that just had it in them, but was too interested in partying, girls, and rugby. You know, so I probably didn't concentrate as much as I should have done, but definitely had the appetite for more of a grafting career, so more of a physical based. Industrial job, and went into college at Warwickshire, and actually trained as a farrier. So if you don't know what that is, that's actually shoeing horses, putting shoes on horses, not shooting horses. Oh, okay. As some people seem to think when I say that. But yeah, so putting shoes on horses like a blacksmith, and I did that for about 2-3 years. I left and because I wasn't enjoying it, and then I was a mechanic. So again, I was never necessarily in office based or sales role at all from the age of 16 to around 21. And then I made the decision because of watching sort of family members. So my brother's a farrier and my father's a mechanic. After seeing them work extremely hard, and they're losing their neck, their back strength and their knee strength at a young age, it was, is there a way out there to perhaps earn a living doing something, you know, sort of more office based and make more money? And so that was my motive, really, is how can I do something that's not going to be too strenuous on the body, but I can actually make a lot of money from, you know, picking up the phone or knocking on a door. So I started a trainee sales role in advertising for a company called GDS, GDS Publishing, GDS International, based in Bristol. And that was back when I was about 21. And I've got to take my hat off and, you know, give praise to Spencer Green, who's the chairman of that firm, and the people that were surrounded and managed me, because they gave me the entrance to to sales, to going out and selling for a living and selling advertising. And I just worked my way up in the 11-12 years that I was there. I worked my way up as a salesman, a sales exec, to sales manager, to sales director, then to VP of sales, overseeing around 35 of their events globally, from the Bristol office. I also lived in New York. I opened up their North America, worked with them on their North America events, and also their Middle East, their Asia. I went down their Asia, APAC operation. I opened up their Kuala Lumpur location back to 2016. So yeah, I mean, I've been heavily involved within sales, left GDS to go and start my own adventures. And what I was really passionate about originally was sales, just mainly sales. Although I was always involved in senior leadership events organizing, my passion was in sales. So I left and started a sales training company, which was called Paul Clark Sales Consulting Limited. Which is still the limited name of the current business, but that was the drive was originally to do contract sales efforts. So actually outsource sales efforts to me from other organizations, sales training, and also a little bit of recruitment in sales as well. So I wrote a book that year as well, when I started my own business, called Building Sales Warriors, which is still on Amazon, if you might want to take a look. Which was a very well-selling book within sales. It's more of a sales guide for anybody starting to work their way up from trainee to a leadership space, the basics and 10 steps of how to sell an unnurtured lead to developing that into an actual sale. And then, I was introduced to a few health and safety practitioners during that time to help with some of their sales teams. I've always had a passion for health and safety as a subject, I think mainly because there is a motive, which is a model in which it's around, I guess, in this world, being able to save lives and reduce incidents. I guess save lives being the more practical one, because you know, we have an opportunity in this industry to keep people safe, and I love that. And so with my passion being selling and events organizing, and now wanting to be in that industry, I started an event called Health and Safety UK Congress back in, I think it was 2017. We did our first ever HSE UK Congress, and that was where we started with the events organizing and health and safety. But hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea on my transition from where I started into where we are now as a health and safety events organizer.
That's interesting. Like, you never really hear a salesman say, I had a bit of a passion for, or an interest at least in health and safety. That's quite good. You must have had some dealings with some good safety consultants, otherwise you might have gone the other way.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you start to learn, you know, over your career, is that you start to find what's called your dharma. you know, your purpose in life. And,
yeah,
you know, I can sell ice to the Eskimos, but that was only ever for my benefit, unfortunately. And, you know, I've done extremely well selling things, but sales is about, it's about connection. It's about individualism, but also creating that engagement between people, and that environment. And it's not just about selling something to someone and them taking it away from you and using it for the greater good. I think sales is all, it's all about people and people, you know, people buy off people. And I think that breaks through with health and safety is because you get somebody like myself who's a little bit different to the others, that is approachable and knows how to connect the right people together in a way that they can help solve problems. Mm-hmm. And this is a market right now, as you well know, in health and safety, where we've really reached a certain plateau in improvement across HSE. It's a real critical time where the rate of major incidents and fatalities hasn't reduced at all in nearly 7 years. And I'm a big believer with what we do, the events, physical, the right kind of physical based events, James, can help people engage with each other and solve some of the biggest challenges, just having conversations. Even if you have a conversation down the pub, you know, with a mate, and you've got issues with a relationship, you know, just sitting there and chewing the fat and talking through your problem, you always come out, you know, 75% of the time with some answers. And that's what I truly believe. There is a no nonsense opportunity with engaging the right people at the right time to break through and find solutions and find answers, if that makes sense.
It 100% makes sense. Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, the kind of, if everything you're saying just kind of resonates with me, kind of like preaching to the converted 100%. I just had someone else come around to the studio for a podcast interview the other day, and made quite a valid point that everyone that comes on the podcast seems to agree with, like, kind of my outlook, and you're very much the same. Maybe I should start getting some people on that don't agree and just see what happens there. But you're right when you say about the plateau and the kind of fatalities rate. We have just kind of sat at this same level where I don't know whether people consciously think that that's acceptable. Maybe it's subconscious, or maybe they think this is the best we'll ever get. I don't know. But I mean, if you look at the rates now, I mean, we've been around 130 to 140 for the last couple of years, but the last three or four years, the last couple of years, we've been coming up. You know, I think the figures have come in provisionally at 147 this year, whereas the year before they were 144 and then 142. So actually now we're starting to see an upward trend. And then I was thinking about it as well the other day when I was thinking, well, okay, maybe the fatalities have gone down and maybe the physical injuries have gone down, but it'd be very interesting to see how many, I don't know if there's any way that anyone much more intelligent than me could ever do it, but is there a way of tying suicides and mental health to workplace and seeing that, what are those figures going up? Because I think when we had Jason Anker on, he said something very similar to what you've kind of just said, is that we've got so good at the physical side of safety that what we've actually forgot and what we've lost now is the social side. If you think back in the day, everyone would go down the working men's club or the conservative club or whatever, and it was always everyone would go in a pub and everywhere had their own community. We've lost that now. And like you just said, you know, going down a pub and chewing a fat with a mate can make so much difference. So it'd be really interesting to kind of see that side of things.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think it kind of resonates with what I've been trying to achieve. I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, we're a family-run business. Both me and Katie Clark have over 20 years of events organizing experience. But what's nice about, what resonates really well with the industry and what me and Katie do is we're raw, we're real. There's no airs and graces. There's no BS. What you see is what you get. I mean, I think you said to me something about my tattoos, you know, it's a significant message in which, you know, we're not trying to say, well, look, this is me, this is us, this is the issue. Not the issue, sorry, excuse me. This is me, this is us, this is what we do. There's no airs and graces, but this is our objective. You know, looking through, getting beyond the fluff, if you like, of the situation, and looking core to the real core of of what we're trying to achieve, and that is that we're real, raw, and we are honest, and we are going in a direction to try and help people. Our objective is to provide products, events, you know, digital products, the charity, which we can talk about a little bit later on, that can help people, you know, that can support. And it really is simple. It's just putting the right motivated minds, the right kind of citizenship, the right people in the right place at the right time, because there are incredible, you interview some of these guys, you know, I know you interviewed Jason Anker. What a brilliant guy who's learned a hell of a lot. What a great story. And we share his story all over the globe with our products. And there are so many fantastic individuals that just by meeting each other, they're already moving forward and simply coming away and doing something different. Something different must be done, you know, if organizations are to break through the safety plateau and unlock this sort of next stage of safety performance. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, what I love is controversy. I mean, I've met numbers of people that say, you know, there's a lot of controversy around safety differently. You know, there's some people that love the message, some people that don't. You know, I wouldn't like to say my opinion. I'm not a safety professional, so it's very difficult for me to give an opinion after these guys that have 20, 30, 40 years of health and safety practitioner knowledge. So it's very difficult for me to give an opinion. But the one thing I would say is there are a lot of there's a lot of theories around safety practices, safety-based policies, procedures, training has helped, you know, behavioral safety and training itself and behavioral safety training programs. It's created a lot greater awareness of the importance of safety and improved the use of behavior-based safety tools such as risk assessments. Organizations still find themselves facing a safety plateau, but there are multiple my point is that if you were to put Sydney Decker, Todd Conklin, Eric Holnagle, these fantastically influential, brilliant minds that are changing the face of this industry, and some of the guys on the ground that are responsible, even at manager level, for direction and strategy, get these guys together around a table, I have absolutely no doubt that we can cut through the fluff a bit like I was saying about how we're perceived, and I'm perceived because I'm very controversial in my approach, but very raw and very real. If we can get these guys together in a place at the right time and raw, real, and we can increase the motivation around breaking through these current situations. And then, you know, once we get to that point, James, as well, is when we get to the point of where it's reducing, how do we keep it there? When we get to zero, how do we keep it at zero? So, you know, this is an ever, you know, organic currently, but this is an ever evolving space. And yeah, it's an exciting one at the same time. But God, it's critical as well, because, you know, there are too many families. Like you said, this number has increased. There are too many families, you know, individuals that are suffering right now due to incidents and that could have been prevented. And that's probably that's the hardest thing to get over, if you know what I mean.
100%. I mean, there's so much you said there that we're going to talk about, and I'm just kind of scribbling it all down in my mind, thinking, right, don't forget this. But I think let's kind of start off with the fluff and the controversy piece, because I will be honest, that was what kind of drew me to that first video I watched of you. And you get that initial kind of reaction that's kind of ingrained in everybody by the corporate perception of what you should be when you go to work. You know, you should be clean cut, in a shirt, blah, blah, blah. And you get that, you watch a video of yourself, and, you know, for those of you that don't know, you've got like quite visual tattoos on your neck, and I mean, personally, outside of work, I think they look fucking awesome. But it's like when you're in that kind of corporate mindset, your first initial reaction is like, oh, doesn't look very professional. And then I remember challenging myself and going, well, shut up, James, like, you're, because I'm personally so against this kind of perception of professionality. Like, why can't we judge people on what they're delivering and what they're saying and what they're doing, as opposed to what they look like? You know, everyone says, oh, you get a job in the first 30 seconds of an interview. I think, well, that's a load of, like, you know, what if some, you go in and you think, oh, I don't like this guy, he's got tattoos. Or if it was up to me, I'd go to an interview with a cap on, for God's sake, because I can't be bothered to do my hair. But you never would do that. But it's that, I think we're worse in health and safety, and the kind of a slightly loosely connected point of that I'm trying to get to is that I put on LinkedIn a few days ago, I don't know if you saw it, but I put on LinkedIn a few days ago about the overuse of high vis in health and safety videos. So now I make a lot of health and safety videos, the point of them being very, very non-typical health and safety stuff. It's just a normal guy, not this guy in a shirt at the top of the shard or whatever. So I think I wore a high vis in my video once and I did it to take the piss. So I basically said you're devaluing the use of these high vis, you're misleading people, and you're kind of encouraging that perception of health and safety gone mad. So stop using them. Now I would say about 80% of people were like, yes, I 100% agree. But the people that didn't agree with what I was saying were so passionate about it. And I just wonder, is that because I'm missing something, or is it because they're sucked in by the fluff of health and safety of what they've kind of been told over the years that, or just wear a high vis anyway? It's like, it doesn't make sense to me. It's that kind of, it's the same thing as that kind of corporate controversy you're talking about. We've got it, but maybe even worse in health and safety.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, and that's, you're bang on. There's a number of, the way that I look at it is like peeling the onion. There's multiple layers of the onion. And with me, not just me, I think, you know, look at Todd Conklin. I mean, Todd is one of the most influential guys in the world right now in this space. And he is just him. You know, that's what I love about Todd, is he is him. And I'm a very deeply spiritual man, so I believe in higher consciousness, in that you know, to be really in touch with yourself, it doesn't matter what you're wearing, it doesn't matter about the shell that we and our bodies carry, our spirit within, that's all rubbish. It's really what's deep down inside, the core of that onion, which is the most important part. And that Todd's a prime example, and that's not to say that Todd's appearance is anything but brilliant, but he resonates pure passion, and he is just one hell of a fantastic speaker, and he only has to open his mouth within 30 seconds, you know, he means business, and he is going to be one of the biggest movers and shakers in the world in this industry to help break through this current safety plateau, and his thoughts and feelings on human performance are just second to none. But that comes down to a few things, right? Just if I come back, obviously, if I may, to your question. There's a huge percent, you know, people can go within 5 seconds of an interview, right? If you see somebody that's got tattoos and you don't like them, what's that got to do with the message that I'm purveying? This is the thing that we have to do in HSE and in safety across the board, is we've got to be ready to change, and we've got to be willing to facilitate change. And this is, the stats show that we're not doing enough to reduce the injury rates to a point that's going to be help us break through the current plateau and improvement. So we have to be in a position where we have to do things differently, and we've got to peel those layers of the onion in order to understand exactly how we can advance our practices to help keep people safe. And we're not talking about global plateau improvement. We're talking about markets that have huge economy opportunities, that have financial stability, you know, within reason. You know, you've got the UK, Europe, North America. That's where the HSE statistics have come from. 7 years, and like you said, I haven't looked at the recent stats, but if they're increasing, we're in a seriously challenging situation. I believe that's why, you know, I've attended a number of events, James, in the past 12 months, just to gain a feel for everything. And again, I'm going to be controversial. I'm not going to say, you know, and people who run events might turn around and go, this is detriment to their business. But there, a lot of these events are just about lining their pockets. If we make money, that's great. But our dharma, our goal as an events organizer, is to use all our years of experience in sales and events management to be able to provide a product that can genuinely help senior leaders, health and safety leaders, reduce the number of incidents and save lives. That's our objective. If we make some cash along the way, that's absolutely fantastic. That's great news. But our dharma, our goal on this earth is to be able to provide engagements, solutions digitally and physically that can help these guys who are, do you know what, I've got to take my hats off to them, who have given their lives, their careers to keeping people safe. And that's a feat in itself. That is a hard feat. And so what better than to have an opportunity to engage peer on peer with safety professionals and share some of the best content, some of the best networking, dinner, when do you get the vice president of health and safety of a Fortune 500 with another VP of HSE from Fortune 500, actually knock hips, sit down, have a beer together. And that's what our events are all about. It's about engagement, but it's also about supporting these guys in their field rather than having charging them God knows how much money to come along and hope to walk around 100 booths and come out with a solution. And it's time wasted at the end of the day. So we're just trying to cut through the fat, and we're just trying to do it in a way. Like you say, I mean, it is controversial. What we're doing isn't controversial. It's simple, really, what we're doing. But I guess, people look at us and think, I think I was the last person, one of the clients at Europe turned around to me and said, Paul, you do not look like you should be in health and safety. You look like you should be at a rock concert. It was just, fair enough, he was probably right. But, at the end of the day, we're the mover and shaker in this industry for events engagement services. And that's the way we want to be. And I think that's a reflection of how the industry should be. We need some movers and shakers. It's also as well, sorry to go on a bit, because I'm sure.
You carry on, mate. It's all good stuff.
Well, there's the thing that I would say is that, we're also in an industry that is always, and I mean this with all due respect, but this isn't my words. This actually come from the market itself. And we've got a series of major advisory councils in the UK, Europe, North America, made up of industry leaders of the highest order. But it's very much an aging industry, health and safety. And what we, 100%. As a group of events organisers, end users, solution partners, HSE professionals, as a team, united we are on trying to encourage Gen Zs, millennials to come into this market. Okay. So I think the other thing is we're a face as an events organizer, as a young events organizer. I say young, I'm 35, but we want to be the face of making this industry exciting again, making it raw, making it real. And I think that's the kind of angle that we want to communicate as well, that we want to move away from also a paper pushing industry and turn this into a high technology market, because that in itself, no matter what, if we can use predictive analytics, if we can use virtual reality solutions to help with health and well-being, if we can use drone technology to monitor major explosions and major incidents, catastrophic incidents, we should be moving in that direction at a lot faster pace than we already are. And that's not including markets that Middle East that are very early stage. So, we're not just trying to events organize. I guess my point here, James, is my company is trying to be the face of change alongside, on the back burner, directing this market into more exciting future based safety programs.
Well, I mean, spot on, mate. I mean, you're literally, if this was a video call, you'd just see me aggressively like nodding my head the whole way through. When you said there about like it's an aging industry, that for me was just like, it's spot on. I remember when I used to work for a company and we had a massive, and I mean massive, health and safety team. They were huge, and it spanned all the way across the UK. And I used to joke with a colleague of mine when we cancelled we used to do like a conference every year where the whole team would get together. It was a big thing. It was like 2 days and you would go to this conference and it got cancelled 1 year and it got cancelled the next year. And somebody said to me, why do you think it's getting cancelled? And I said, because I can't find a city with enough defibrillators because everyone's so close to having a stroke or a heart attack. Because the team is so old. But I actually got a phone call a couple of weeks later from my boss saying that I've offended someone by using that by that joke. They're implying that everyone's on death's door. And I was like, they are? I was 26 when I worked there, 28 now. I had to think about that then. And it's like, I'm still the youngest in the room all the time. I am the youngest health and safety professional on average that I've come around. Now, there are people out there my age doing this stuff, but one of the biggest passions for me personally is to kind of bring to another one of your points is that the reason we call this podcast and YouTube channel Rebranding Safety is because that's the point. We want to challenge that you don't look like you should be working in health and safety. You look like you should be in a rock conference. You know, well, what does health and safety look like? What does it look like? It normally looks like an old, overweight, white guy in a high viz. And that's not what it is. It's just anybody. Anyone who wants to do it, come and do it. And actually, it's actually one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most interesting industries to work in, because it's one of few roles in a business where you get to put your fingers in every single pie of the business. Mm-hmm. You extend everywhere.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I get, every time, you know, I've had this my whole career, really, because when people ask me what I do, it's not, well, I'm a doctor, what I do, or, you know, even if you say I'm in sales, they want more, you know, what do you mean you're in sales? What do? You know, it's when I say that I'm, you know, if I look at my old employer, I was a sales director, a B2B events organizer. Again, they kind of don't know. But when I say that I do health and safety, people look at me and go, oh, that must be boring. I mean, that's the current perspective. And that's me. I'd say majority of the time I say that I work in health and safety because I do. You know, I'm an events organizer. I'm more of an events organizer, but I am passionate about HSC. And my long-term objective is to be more of a thought leader in this space when I learn it, when I become a little bit more in depth in understanding health and safety, because it is probably only really 3 years I've been getting my feet wet in understanding the market and involved. But, you know, when I ask people, you know, what market do you, they ask me, what market do you work in? They say health and safety. They go, well, that's a boring industry. Oh, it's all about hard hats and clipboards. Yeah. But that's the perception that people have of safety, which, you know, isn't good. You know, these are normal people, you know, that work in normal jobs, and health and safety is holistic through anything you do, you know, let alone your own personal safety. But in any workplace safety, you know, any workplace that they work, they'll have a health and safety set of procedures, or certainly a due diligence to their own health and safety that they have to proceed. And that, what's that say about this market? That it's boring. You know, how do we inject a bit of life into health and safety? You know, where we come away from, you know, it being a boring paper pushing industry and actually get people to realize that this is serious stuff. Not only is it incrementally important because of your own safety, personal safety, corporate health and safety. I mean, health and well-being, we're seeing a drastic increase in health and well-being issues. I mean, I could talk all day about that. I mean, it's the influx of technology that our bodies aren't used to using. You know, social media, that's the biggest cause, I think, of major health and well-being issues in the workplace. You know, but we're seeing this. And I guess my point is, sorry, James, that, you know, we need to inject a bit of life into this market. And I think from the events side, we're doing that. But how do we do it, I guess, within business, within industry, is we need to make it attractive. And yeah, I don't have all the answers, but I think that's an incremental challenge, is bringing a bit of fresh blood in that can come with fresh ideas, new ideas. And I'm a big believer that technology can be key to this plateau. But that's my opinion anyway.
I agree. I think change comes, you know, one by one. You know, I've always kind of described changes as like a virus. You know, if I change the way I work, the next person I talk to, you know, just an example of that, one of the reasons I started Rebranding Safety is my best friend is a builder and quite the opposite of a safe person ever. He's a right pain in the ass. But he said, you know, actually, just from the years I've been working in safety and talking to him about it and saying my frustration and me learning and stuff like that, he said, well, actually, he's inherently become a safer person because he understands what it's there for and actually how to do it properly, not how we currently do it. And for me, that was a big it was a nice thing to hear, don't get me wrong, but it was also that, well, if I can make that change to one person, maybe we can do it more. And it takes people like yourself as well, the coming into the market and saying, no, I don't accept this. This is not what it is, and we need to change that. And then the next person you work with or talk to, it could be anybody, but they'll change, and then the next one will change. But I think it's on us as safety professionals and people working in the safety industry to drive that change by ourselves, and eventually it will come. But it's a massive challenge. It is a huge challenge, and that's pretty much what I do on LinkedIn all day, is just challenge people and piss them off and and then lose connections.
You can't, I mean, at the end of the day, if currently the situation is, something needs to change, something needs to happen. And as much as some people may not like this, you know, let's be open and honest. You know, a lot of people don't like the way I look, but that doesn't change. It doesn't change the fact that something needs to happen within the events industry to help these senior guys. I have people knocking on our door, you know, very senior guys. The responses from our North America Congress were just out of this world. They were just like, this is the cutting edge. And not for any reason, apart from the fact they got what they needed out of it. You know, they didn't know that time is money. And, you know, at the end of the day, if they're spending 2-3 days, you know, at some of these massive events, you know, where they, you know, there's 200,000 bloody people. I mean, even that just gives me anxiety. You know, I just think at the end of the day, let's not beat around the bush. Let's get straight to business. Let's cut through the bullshit and let's try and serve and provide service that people really, really need. And that's good quality conversation and engagement, and access to the right kind of technology and approach. I mean, I'll give you an example. One of my best clients, Ayres Web, I'm sure they won't mind me mentioning their names, but these guys are very much, their approach is absolutely fantastic. Their technology is absolutely top draw. But the way they approach the health and safety market with their messaging is superb. But their team on site, Richane Lee, Jason, Don, they are just fantastic at being able to engage with health and safety professionals. Their approach is just top draw. And that, again, is they have a technology that I've had people coming out of my events going, wow, you know, I need that solution in my life. We need that solution in our business. And I've come away saying, I didn't even know they did that. So we're breaking through in a number of ways. You know, we're helping health and safety practitioners engage with other practitioners to solve problems. But we're also introducing health and safety practitioners into technology partners that didn't even know that technology existed. And for me, that's breakthrough stuff. And that's only going to benefit this market. And hopefully, you know, we talk about the safety plateau, but let's look at the bigger picture, because we will get there. You know, this will help consistently keep people safe. And yeah, so I mean, that's sort of where I'm looking at the moment, Jay.
I think you're right. I think you kind of hit a good point there, where you finished off on the plateau. We need to probably think, you know, beyond that. I think my good friend of mine and my wife always take the piss out of me, because I always talk about the actual, like, if, let's say, for example, I don't know, a person annoys me, and I'll always go, like, in a passing comment, I say, I don't know why I work every day to keep people alive when they piss me off so much. And it's just a joke, but... And my wife always goes, like, you're not working in NHS, James. You're not keeping people alive. And I think, actually, let's really think about what health and safety is. It's the potential that it could change and improve the NHS. You know, if we can stop people getting to the NHS, health and safety professionals could be the answer that the NHS has got. We've got a mental health problem. Well, what are we the cause of that mental health problem? As businesses and industry, the potential of our industry, if we get this right, is phenomenal. It's just unbelievable what we could actually do. We could be happier. We could be safer. We could be physically, you know, more able. We could just all live in such an amazing place and work in an amazing place. I do not feel comfortable in the few years when I have kids or whatever, sending my kids out to work in some of the businesses that I see now that are just churning out health and safety for the sake of churning it out. And you're not realizing the potential of this stuff. At the moment, we're just going, I the way I look at it is, I think we spot hazards and we assess liability. We don't assess risk. We say what's going to send us to court. And can you imagine working for somebody that actually all they care about is being compliant with the law? So what if there was no law? Are we going to bring children labour back and have them crawling under machines and going up chimneys again? I don't think we would. I hope not. You know, I have faith in the humanity. But it's just the potential of us, like you're saying there, would be just phenomenal. So to kind of close that off and bring it to our next point then, you mentioned about the expo, and I've been to like a lot of the health and safety expos, and not just the expo in London, but all the other ones around the country as well. They do provide a value, yes, but I do think, for me, I stopped going, and I'd be interested to get your opinion on it, but the reason I kind of stopped going, the only reason I used to go really was one, because Nigel Owens did it 1 year, and then I think last year Johnny Wilkinson did it, another year Brian Cox was there, and it just, I always go to these things and I just think, well, I'm only here really to see Brian Cox or Nigel Owens or whatever, yeah. And I might go to a couple of health and safety specific speakers, but actually this is the Health and Safety Expo. I don't really do anything other than collect free shit and watch somebody that talks about nothing related to health and safety. And they're always the busy talks. When you get like the interesting debates or something, they get a bit busy, but they're nowhere near these kind of people that are not talking about health and safety. And I thought, does that tell us something about why people are actually here? They're not actually there to kind of break through this plateau. So was my question then, to very long-winded, but was that, did you think that was a gap in the market, or did you just, were you frustrated by it and you just thought, actually we're not getting anything out of this, or what was it that kind of, you thought this network that you're doing now, this kind of 360 engagement and getting people all together, breaking with technology and professionals and bringing them together, which is amazing, what was that kind of what do they call it, like break glass moment, that light bulb moment?
Fantastic question. So there's a couple of things on that, though, if I just rewind. So, I mean, that's sort of 360. Bear in mind, you know, this didn't come overnight. You know, the one thing as a typical entrepreneur is I do chuck myself in the deep end, and then I start to put the puzzle together as in the mix as I'm doing things. You know, I like to get myself right in the middle of the boat. And I knew that this market is one that we can support. I mean, with events, you've got to keep it fresh. You've got to keep it new. You know, at the end of the day, I find some of the topics fascinating. But, you know, for example, I'm friends with Lewis Moody. So Lewis Moody is he used to be our coach, actually, or one of the director of rugby for Bradford and Avon Rugby Club. And he's a great guy, and he's got some really good. He was captain of England. So he's.
I absolutely love Lewis Moody.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and he's a good friend, and we've done some really good things together. And you know, he was a huge advocate of my business when I started out. He was very supportive, you know, but sort of, you know, verbally and giving me the direction. But you know, we were looking at Lewis to come and speak at HSE UK to talk about mental health and well-being, and also leadership, you know, leadership within the game, and using that as a means to, I think one of the things that is important is, you know, we can pull in these rock star speakers because you think it's going to draw a crowd. So, you know, you could put Sydney Decker, he's like the Foo Fighters or the Raw Blood or the Biffy Clyro of health and safety, you know, or the Calvin Harris of the dance music scene, which is great. It draws a crowd, and I love that. But do you know what? Like, anybody can do that. I think anybody can do that. I think we're in a market that it needs shaking up. The one thing I would say, and this is, I've got a really strong opinion on this, but I think we need to turn health and safety from being an industry and turning it into a way of life. And what I mean by that is we should be educating anybody and everyone through school on health and safety. And trying to turn that from it being an industry that you walk into, or the minute I start a company, health and safety is a policy within an organization or something we need to adhere to, because people don't like hierarchy. They don't like having to adhere to something, and they can sometimes become passive and, I guess, resist being told what to do. I'd say there's quite a large amount of the world that are resistant and can be quite passive and quite arrogant into, well, you tell me to do that, I'm going to do it this way, or lazy. And there's all sorts of things that lead up to an incident actually happening. It's like grassroots stuff. I think we should be educating. I think the government should be highly involved in us trying to bring education on health safety. The big one, mental health. You know, kids are coming into a transformation in digital that is moving so fast. Right, the technology today is never going to be any slower. It's just going to get faster and faster and faster. We are not built as human beings to deal with the level of technology that is being thrown on us every second of the day. You know, our brains, we were not built in humanity to be able to deal with this. And so we're constantly overloaded. And health and well-being is one of the biggest reasons people have workplaces. Looks at Jason Anker, his health and well-being was the reason that he made the wrong decision that day, which caused him to have that incident. You know, this all can be fixed, but it's not just something that happens overnight. A bit like me coming into this industry, I'm learning what I'm doing. It's grassroots stuff. And I think health and safety, I can chuck rock star speakers at our events all the time. But if we really want to get change on the industry, I think we need to start building an industry or building health and well-being as a way of life, a way of understanding, a chemical, a part of our makeup of awareness, rather than it being an industry that we all have to fall into and we work under. Now, I'm very passionate about that. But the other thing is, I think with moving and shaking an event, I think it's that breakthrough moment when, you know, you just you'll have to attend an event, James. I'll bring you along to Lisbon or to the one in the UK in Leicester. You'll see it's those breakthrough moments where you just see people coming out of that meeting where we haven't listened to somebody talk at you for an hour and a half, 2 hours, where people were just falling asleep, but you've got people challenging each other in a workshop. You've got 45 senior decision makers and you've got somebody that has a message. And you know what? Let that man speak, challenge it, and then you'll see the opposition challenge back and you come out with a solution. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the game changer. Is just you can be there's great minds that are low level. There's fantastic minds that are high level. I think it's brilliant that you're seeing we speak to a lot of people on human performance at the moment. There's a lot of ex-rugby players. Dan Hipkiss is one of them. I don't know Dan personally, but Dan Hipkiss, I believe, has started an organization or certainly works with an organization pushing human performance methods that they've learned from the sport. So there's so much, I think, in terms of bringing in different thoughts, different feelings, different industries, different games, sports, markets that can help. Because like I say, health and safety is holistic, and I don't think it matters. As long as somebody's got an idea, it can be controversial, it can be sometimes conflicting, and it certainly could be an opportunity for them to put forward their thoughts and feelings. I think we're on the right path, but our events are the vehicle for enabling that, if that kind of makes sense.
It does, 100%. Again, you know, just one wholeheartedly agree with pretty much everything you're saying. I just, when you said about like it kind of just being a way of life, that for me just resonates so much. I mean, I was having kind of like a little business chat with the wife a few days ago, and she asked me, you know, what's the aim of rebranding safety, you know, the long term aim. I said, in essence, it's to put health and safety out of business. Other than specialist people, like really specialist people for real high risk stuff, I shouldn't exist. My job should not exist. They're basic skills. I'm not a very academic person. You know, I didn't go to university, quite similar to yourself. I just fell into health and safety, learned how to, you know, learn the concept of risk assessments and the risk assessment document and all this other stuff. And I don't want to get on my high horse and start ranting about it. The point is that, like, the simple skills that businesses should be doing themselves, and we shouldn't have this add-on team on the side of it. And I just think, yes, you can have people to come and help you do the admin, whatever, but I really do think there is a potential out there for it just to be a way of life, just something we do all the time, because we all risk assess. All the training I do, and I deliver training, I always say to people, have you ever done a risk assessment? And they'll be like, yeah, I did this document and it was for a machine or it's for this. I'm like, all right, have you ever done a risk assessment outside of work? No. I'm not a health safety professional, James. I'm not sad like you. And it's like, all right, so when you don't cross a crossing, you cross 100 meters down the road, is that not a risk assessment? You do it all the time. We're amazing at it. Kids are really good at it, you know. Ask mum if they can have any sweets, and then mum says no, and you go and ask dad. That's a risk assessment. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of way of life that we really need to get into. But I mean, I'm just conscious of time, and I don't want to. To be honest, I could sit here and talk to you all day. I think, Paul. I'm fascinated by your charity. It's a very kind of, even just the network stuff and the kind of breaking through the plateau. That's a very kind of moral kind of thing you're doing there. What kind of brought you around to creating a charity and that kind of giving back even more? Because the argument could be made that actually just by doing what you're doing through the network, you're giving back anyway. So what made you think, oh, we're not doing enough, I want to do charity work? Or how did that come about?
I guess when you look at the situation is you've got, let's look at the wider map, the web, if you like, of this. The sectors, you've got the health and safety professionals that are put into place to keep people safe within an organization. You've got the associations, you know, that are putting together the legislation, the procedures, the standardizations to ensure that companies can follow procedure and stay safe as a corporate entity. You've got the events organizers. So, you know, you've got the events organizers like me who put the opportunities together for people to discuss all this, to break through, find the content and the ideas and the solutions, etc. to meet with each other, to mind share, all that kind of jazz. And then you've got, you know, the and that could include digital online as well, you know, with physical and digital products. That's what we do. And then you've got the solution partners, you know, that provide technology that can help the HSE professionals or even provide services, you know, training that keeps HSE professionals to help keep people safe. But then you've got another area, which is the people that unfortunately have these major incidents, the families that are affected by losing their loved ones, you know. And we're not forgetting about them, but we know sometimes we look at them as a statistic, you know. And I think that's quite sad, you know. I know, I get it, we've got to look at the stats, but let's really get down and again, it's that peeling the onion. Let's look really deep into those layers. And you're looking at the effect of families that are suffering, you know, children that have lost their fathers, their mothers, you know, that are really, really struggling, that maybe not focused at school, that need the right health and well-being support to deal with these situations. I mean, God forbid anything ever happened to me, I would want somebody to be there to support my children, you know, outside of a family. And we live in a time where, unfortunately, currency, money dictates how we can deal with things in the right way. Some people aren't as fortunate as others. And in fact, you know, it's only going to get harder. You know, life's only going to get tougher financially because of the challenges that we have in the economy. Hopefully things turn, but you know, at the end of the day, we want to provide support as an organization. We're doing all the right things with our events, we're doing all the right things with our digital products, and we're doing all the right things, and I like to think that I'm doing all the right things in terms of speaking and messaging to try and educate the market and bring in the right people. But one thing we need to unite on is, what do we do about this other part of the web that need support, that need help, that need guidance, whether it be, you know, for certain amounts of money to help them with the health and well-being, you know, counseling or anything like that, or, you know, anything, you know, it can be anything. But the whole point of this is that we are, as an organization, creating that final prong, which is going to help support that other part of the web, which is the people that are affected by major incidents and fatalities of loved ones. But outside of insurance, you know, insurance, some people Insurance will only cover a certain amount of things. Maybe they don't have insurance. You know, I don't know. But we're going to create a global charity. It's going to start, first of all, mainly for the UK, to support UK incidents and fatalities. Hopefully, there aren't many of them moving forward. But if there are, we are encouraging, first of all, we're encouraging the website's being built at the moment, and the charity's being set up by my team. And we're going to encourage for our events, as you can imagine, we get a lot of sponsorship, but companies being companies, they ask for discounts. We're actually encouraging those discounts to go directly into the charity. So they can be 5, 10% of the total sponsorship fee of, you know, anything from £5,000 to £25,000. So, you know, that goes directly into the charity. And on my organization, we'll be dedicating 10% of its annual profits to go directly into that charity as well. And like I say, once the charity is set up, we're encouraging ambassadors from all over the world to come in and help drive the charity to create funding. And that money is going to be there for people to apply for anything, you know, from as minimum as £500 for counselling to £50,000 for anything serious that they need to help rebuild their lives. So, and they can apply for that directly through the website. And if they hit the criteria needed, then they will receive the funds to help them with their situation. So that's the plan. It's still early days, but that's where we are with the charity right now.
That's phenomenal. I mean, I got nothing much to say about that other than, you know, well done, congratulations. What a guy to kind of spot that. You guys and your team, that's phenomenal. That kind of, you are right. I don't think we purposely forget those people, but they do. And I don't know if forget's the right word, like you were saying, but they do in essence become a statistic. And I do think that's one of the most powerful things, not about Jason's story, but about Abby, his daughter's story, where she talks about the effect on her and Jason's best friend as well, is now a motivational speaker as well. And he talks about the effect on him, and it's just, it kind of knocks you back, and you do sit there and think, okay, as a business, if we kill someone or we've, you know, really hurt someone, that is bad and we will feel bad about that. But corporate memory is not very long, is it? Let's be honest.
No.
And you know, touch wood, I've never had a fatality or not so much of a serious, you know, kind of real life-changing injury, but I would feel so morally obligated to kind of go and help those people. But if you're part of a business, you would have to do that outside, because I don't think the business would support them any more than what they can. And that does vary on the kind of moral integral kind of policy or whatever of your business, but I would suspect that we do forget about those, the collateral damage and the process beyond, and that we let the insurance company take over. And that is a phenomenal kind of challenge you've set yourself. But hats off to you and congratulations. And I really hope that kind of works out. And I don't know how, but if there is any way that Rebranding Safety or myself can help you out on that, we would support that 100%, whether it's a fun run or a bike ride or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll definitely help you there. That's an amazing, amazing thing you've done there.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, thank you very much. I mean, there's always, again, it's all about collaboration. We're all in this together. And that's what I always try to say when I do the keynote for most of my events, just to speak up on who we are and what we're trying to achieve and what the objective are. And, you know, whether you're running podcasts, which, are, you know, I admire what you do greatly, you know, and fair play. You know, it is fantastic. I've listened to your podcast. They're fantastic. And you're going in the right direction. Any kind of education, any kind of messaging is good. You know, we just need to keep getting it out there and keep circulating it and keep that moving. And we will find solutions, we'll find answers, and we'll continue to grow in an area that needs support. You know, it is nothing gives me greater pleasure than to be able to provide you know, products that help, and that's what we're in it for at the end of the day. And you know, we're all in this together, united we are, in a market. And again, I'm trying to come away from the word industry and just you know, word it as it is, in a way of life that determines a better, safer, healthier practice and lifestyle for everybody involved in this world. So yeah,
100%.
Pleasure.
Andrew Sharman says that it's a safety is a social exercise, and I think what you're doing there, just, you know, is a testament to that. And you're right, once we come together, we'll get there. So let's finish off then. If you want to just kind of give us an, so someone's listened to this or listened to you and they're thinking, wow, you know, I want to know more about Paul or the HSE network or, you know, the Global Series Foundation, anything like that. Do you want to just kind of tell them how to get hold of you or how to get hold of the business, what the business is in a nutshell? I know you spoke about it through the podcast, but just in a nutshell, just kind of say, this is what we do. This is how we can help you. This is how you can come and get us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, again, we're not an events organizer. The events itself are vehicles and they're just products. You know, we do not class ourselves as an events organizer. We have three businesses. We have the HSE Global Series. The HSE Global Series is a corporate events schedule, which are active right now in the UK, Europe, North America, and Middle East markets, and we enter Africa in September 2020. So our goal is to grow senior leadership forums, which last 2 days, with the best possible highlight speakers, cutting-edge speakers, and they're run by their own senior leadership advisory councils for each region, made up of HSE leaders from that particular country or continent, which makes sure that our content is the best of breed, and it's run by the industry for the industry, not run by an events organizer that puts the content together themselves. So it's very cutting edge. It's the best possible breed in content, and it determines the best in breed attendees as well. So like I say, we provide those vehicles as means to people to keep that physical optimum engagement in health and safety and environmental globally. So that's the HSE Global Series. And then we have HSE Network, which is a digital online content portal that's going to be providing articles, content pieces, case study success stories, and it will also have a TV network, or what we're calling interview content, which is basically interviews with senior business leaders from all over the globe. So that includes the likes of James Pomeroy from Lloyd's Register, Jason Anker, Rob Schellinger, the vice president of HSEQ for Talos Energy, Mr. John Green, who's a huge advocate of safety differently theories and human performance, and he's going around the world right now talking about these topics. He's the chief safety officer of Aecon. We've interviewed these guys, and we're providing the opportunity to basically engage in actual interviews with these guys from the comfort of your office, from your mobile phone, anywhere in the world. So that's HSE Network, which also tie in the best possible unique content that you get your hands on. And then the third business, all coming under my company and my organization, is the HSE Global Series Foundation, which is what we just talked about a minute ago, which is the charitable fund, which will be providing a resource and funds and money opportunities for individuals and families that have lost loved ones as a result of workplace incidents. So these are our businesses. Like I say, we're a consultant, we're a thought leader, we're passionate about health and safety, and we're here to change the market and hopefully help break through this global plateau in HSE improvement. If you'd like to reach out, give me a call or contact us directly at paul@paulclarkconsulting.co.uk or paul@hseglobalseries.com, and we love to hear from you. It'd be great to hear from anybody that would like to know more about our business, and excited to go on this journey with anybody that would be interested.
Awesome. We'll put all the websites, addresses, LinkedIn's, all in the description for everyone to click on and go to. We'll link, I'll have a look for your book on Amazon as well, and I'll link that in there as well. I might even have a look myself. I might see, I could do with some sales skills. Maybe I'll like have a purchase, put it on the wish list.
Yeah, Bill, you buy the book, mate. Building Sales Warriors. $6.99 on Amazon.
I can't sell for shit, so I think I definitely would need that. Give that a read. Okay, Paul, that was awesome. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, mate. No problem at all.
Okay, guys, thanks for listening. That was episode 2 of the mini series. Breaking the plateau. How hard is it to say breaking? Like, Jesus Christ. Anyway, that was episode 2. How awesome is the work that Paul Clark's doing? It's absolutely spot on. His way he works, his mannerisms, how he is, completely resonates with me. I absolutely love his style. don't forget to go check him out on LinkedIn, check out what the HSC Global Series, the HSC Network is doing. Just follow the LinkedIn page, there's a hell of a lot coming from them in the future, and you definitely want to be keeping your eye on that. Check out all the links in the description. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then give us a like or a rating or a review on whatever platform you're listening. We really, really appreciate it. If you rate or review us on iTunes, take a screenshot, share it with us on Twitter so we can give you a shout out in the podcast. Don't forget to share this podcast, people. There's lots of businesses out there, self-employed, tradesmen, etc., that haven't got a clue of what's going on in the industry. We need to share this stuff out there. Let's not be insular. Let's not work in a silo. If we want to make a difference, we need to give this shit out for free. Let's share it. Help me do that. I make no proceeds from this. I just want to help yous all. So share it for me, please. I would love to see it. And if I see you share it, 100%, I will give you a shout out and you will feel like you've succeeded in life because you've had a shout out on Rebranding Safety. That's all you've ever endeavoured to achieve in your life, right? Right? Anyway, don't forget to come back next week and listen to episode 3 where we close out. We talk all about compliance, stopping the conversation. So is that kind of chastising us from further innovation and innovative ideas and collaboration, etc., etc.? And that's all with John Dempsey, so don't forget to check in next week. I'll talk to you next week. Safe.